evening and welcome to Podcast on Fire, episode 15, your number one stop for Asian cinema. I'm your host, Stuart Sutherland. Joining me tonight is the mighty Ken.
Good evening.
And somewhere in the background is Green Fan Mike. He'll be joining us soon. As usual, diving right into it, what was the last movie you watched, Ken?
The last movie I watched is a movie called The Four Invincible, which seems very... It came out the same year as that Shaw Brothers movie, Crippled Avengers, that Chang Cheh directed. And it indeed deals with fighters with some kind of disability. And once... I should explain. One's deaf and dumb, one has lost an arm, and one is blind. And they take revenge on the people that did this to them. And they turn to an old fallen master who is played by Mike Vanna's dear old favorite, Ku Feng. And very much a standard Taiwanese effort when you look at it and when you get into it. But it really is one of those surprisingly entertaining and well-made low-budget efforts. You expect it to be kind of cruddy, but they really do pull it off. And even though it might be not a carbon copy of Crippled Avengers as such, but obviously it tries to follow in its footsteps and that kind of structure to a martial arts movie with disabled heroes, I guess what made was replicated a few more times, maybe 10 or 20, I don't know. But the Four Invincible, super, super, super solid and entertaining, and just it flies by. And got some quite fierce and brutal scenes to set up the fairly brutal revenge. But yeah, I did like that unexpectedly more than I expected to. So. If that makes sense. So, but speaking of Crippled Avengers, has any of you seen that?
No.
Yeah, of course. It's an absolute classic. One thing I was going to say, actually, that I don't quite understand about that film, is that, you know, when usually Americans rename flicks, you know, they try and make it sound harder. So, you know, you've got Clan of the White Lotus becomes Fist of the White Lotus. Of course. Or 36 Chamber becomes Shaolin Master Killer. Now, they've got Crippled Avengers, right, which was the English title that went with the Hong Kong release, which sounds awesome, and yet it was called Mortal Kombat. I don't get that. Crippled Avengers is easily the cooler title.
Am I alone in thinking that? Mike. Well, absolutely the coolest title. I was under the impression that Crippled Avengers was known as Return of the... What is it, Five Deadly Venoms?
Well, I think it went under both titles.
Yeah.
But neither.
So I thought you were going to say that, speaking of lame retitles, because the return title seems like a stretch.
Well, yeah, but you can understand why they put that one on there, because of obviously Five Deadly Venoms being a popular film. But calling it Mortal Kombat, that's just lame. Anyway, yeah, Crippled Avengers, that's a total classic.
What's the do they have like a trio of crippled fighters or a quartet, or
have you not seen it, Ken?
No.
Oh, my word, Kenneth.
But I am intrigued by it. It's because it doesn't seem like one of those boring Venoms films.
You're not allowed onto the POF Shaw Brothers Spectacular until you've watched that film, my friend.
I'll just send it then, because I don't own it.
Me either, which means you're going to be the only guy hosting it on Sunday.
Yeah, but you've never watched any films, do you?
Oh, lay shut.
I expect
when we do get to that Shaw Brothers extravaganza, I'll definitely let you know that my focus within Shaw Brothers sort of is all over the place, so... Therefore, I've not gotten to all the classics, but I promise I will.
It's well known that Ken's the brains of the operation round here, as evidenced by the POF that me and you kind of hosted without Ken.
So, well, just the good looks then.
Yeah. You're like brains, and it's like Thunderbirds. Your brains.
Oh, cheers.
You'd be
Kenobi, he gets no action.
Kenobi Troy, and I'd be the one who has to sit on the space station all the time.
Penelope.
Not Penelope.
The driver.
Actually, he was quite cool. But no, the blonde one who has to sit in the space station, all he does is like press a couple of buttons and look at a satellite.
He was a twat.
Basically a monkey.
At least I ain't got a massive forehead. I think this is getting off topic.
Yeah. What the fuck made you think about Thunderbirds?
Yeah, because you're the one who sits there doing all the technical stuff, ain't it? Pushing buttons and making sure things are recorded and that.
That instantly made you think of like a children's TV program for how long back?
It made me think of some kind of nerd who does all the technical stuff while the other people do all the,
the
heroic shit.
Mike has a very spontaneous mind. We do know that from past podcasts.
Aye.
Yeah, Crippled Avengers. Each one of them gets crippled in some fashion. Blind, deaf, mute. I think Sun Chien gets his legs... I think they get chopped off, and so he has to have metal legs, if I remember rightly.
Right.
But yeah, they're all crippled in some way, and then they have to team up, because obviously if each of them have lost something. So if they team up, then they can gain those senses or limbs back, essentially. It's a really, really good film. Lo Mung is really good in that, as the mute. I think it gives a really good physical performance in that film.
It's quite funny in The Four Invincible that the guys that they use for two of them at least are normally like a comedic supporting players in martial arts films. One is called Tu Siu Ming. He's a cross-eyed fella. He usually turns up in many films. You do recognize him when you see him. Another guy is called Dai Siam, who's also cross-eyed, I believe, and just looks funny, you know, not leading man material, which was kind of fun to see that they took the chance to make an effect in what was probably not going to be, you know, beforehand the masterpiece of that year. And when you do have, you know, Ku Feng to play against, who plays that the fallen master easily and quite effectively, and you know, you all of a sudden have a brew that has very much chance to work, and it does.
Right, I think both of you have done your turn. For some reason I thought Ken was going to pick up, but I realised he'd done his first.
Yes. Yeah. So it's off to the banner, I guess.
Okay, well, as per usual, I watched some Shaw films. I think the most recent is Disciples of Shaolin, which stars Fu Sheng and... Chi Kun Chin. Fung Hakon. It's Fu Sheng is like a country bumpkin, comes in to see his brother in this small kind of town that has lots of two big textile companies running. And he goes to see his brother to find work and stuff like that. And he gets caught up in between in this big fight between the two big businessmen who own the textile places. And starts protecting one of them, the one that his brother works for. And because of his kung fu and because he's good at battering the opposition, he kind of moves up the rankings. Gain more money and more luxury and higher positions in the company, whereas Chi stays kind of hard working and doesn't want any part of it, and is the complete opposite to Fu Sheng's kind of character. Obviously allows for Fu Sheng to do plenty of scrapping, some nice fights in there. Fung Hakon gets to have a good couple of fights as well. Directed by Chang Che. Actually, the reason why I bought it and watched it is because Nick Watkins, who did the audio commentary for Ninja Nature in China, he kept banging on about Disciples of Shaolin. It's his favourite kung fu film of all time.
It's an excellent film. I can absolutely concur with that.
All right, you're a fan then, Kenneth?
Absolutely, it's terrific, terrific film. What probably might amongst my top three Chang-Chi films, I would say. And maybe third.
Yeah, it's a good film. I've got to say, I was a bit disappointed. But that's what I think. That's one of the slight problems of being a Shaw Brothers collector. But kind of like a modern Shaw Brothers collector, like only got into it recently with the Celestials, is that certain films get hyped and hyped big. Like, I remember Rendezvous with Death before that came out, that got a lot of hype in, and Kid from Guangdong has just got a ridiculous amount of hype behind it. It's the same for Disciples of Shaolin, not quite so much, but there's quite a lot of people telling me how great it was.
And all Chang-Chi films almost.
Well, yeah.
You know, they had the room, and obviously, you know, more known before we got the remasters.
But I couldn't help but feeling a little bit disappointed by it. And I don't think that's any fault of the film. It's more of a fault of my expectations, I think. So I was actually a little bit disappointed, but it's still, I mean, it's Shaw Brothers film, so there's still plenty to enjoy in it. And Fu Sheng's really good.
And considering the English title, I think that's the only fault with the film, because I think the English title does not match really with the what essentially is a drama, in my opinion, martial arts drama. And the opening is one of those performances in front of these one-tone backgrounds, and it really says nothing of what's to come.
Yeah, that intro is one of the strangest I've seen. I mean, because you get to see, like, actors doing shapes and, you know, forms and things like that quite regularly, or demonstrating the style of kung fu that's going to be used and things like that. But this one was just, was really long and had no music, if I remember rightly. Just the, you know, the sound effects of Fu Sheng doing some routines and stuff. It's quite a interesting opening sequence. But yeah, I've got to agree that the title seems to bear little or no relation to the actual story or the feel of the film. Like you said, it is a drama with some kung fu thrown in. It's not your typical kung fu film.
This is sort of why I liked it. I expected, considering when this was made, which I think was 75, which is part of a transition for Chang-Chi. It's not fully made it into that Venom's period and stuff, but that to me was a surprise that he still had that in him to give the viewers a Chang-Chi film. You know, it's the type of movie from him that I absolutely love. And I think he was that character drama director. I think he really genuinely he was a master in that regard. So I was fairly affected all throughout. And that story may seem similar because it was actually remade into The Barefoot Kid.
I figured it was.
And with a few alterations here and there. Between the films, I think Chang-Chi's film is much better, but Johnny To's film, I think, has the upper hand in one area because it focuses on something Disciples of Shaolin did not, and it's a love story between the head of the company there. And that love story was in the remake between Maggie Cheung and Dick Long. It's really well made, and I think that was probably a lot better than the melodrama with Aaron Kwok's character, which occupied the majority of the film. I think that they do very much differ in that regard, and therefore you can watch both films without, you know, need to compare that one is better than the other. I think they have different takes. And also it's fun that Lau Garland directed the action in both. It's kind of fun to see, because it's obviously a waifu film, The Barefoot Kid, but if you look at it, it seems like Lau Garland tried to impose on the production as much grounded stuff as he could. Because it's not like a Fong Sai-ok film where it's flying kung fu, whatever they do. And I kind of appreciated that. And because I think Lau Garland was not necessarily opposed to the waifu stuff, but he didn't actually do much of it. And perhaps choose not to do it. So, there you go.
Yeah, well, I'd definitely say that the highlights and the things that are likely to stick in your memory about Disciples of Shaolin are some of the dramatic moments. There's a nice bit of symbolism with Fu Sheng's shoes, which is repeated quite a lot during the course of the film and is quite affecting at the end.
And the clock as well, the little watch.
Yeah. And then also, oh, I'm not going to give away any spoilers, but there's a great moment with the boss, one of the bosses, and his cricket, and the similarity of its name to Fu Sheng's name. That's a really good moment. And then there's one as well where there's all kinds of trouble kicking off and people are smashing stuff up in one of the workshops, and while this is all going on and there's this fight going on, Chi Kuan Chun's still sitting there working away, completely ignoring it. That's another really good moment as well.
I think that is the best I've seen him do as well, Chi Kuan Chun. I think Cheng Che looked at that stoic nature of the character and made it work within the dramatic context of the film. I thought that was a good supporting performance that complemented Fu Sheng's different characters you described. The very much contrasts in between the brothers. And I've never really seen him do that kind of stuff, or been allowed to, you know, act dramatically or within the genre, anyway.
Well, it's a very well-cast film all around. I think everybody fits their character very nicely. I mean, Fu Sheng can do his noble stuff and a bit of action and a bit of drama, and he can do his, goofing around comedy. There's a great bit where he's fighting Fung Hakon, and he says he has to ask somebody about what to do, and then he starts talking to his fists, and his fists tell him to beat Fung Hakon up. It's a really good moment. So overall, I'd say a good film, but I'll probably have to watch it again without the expectation this time. I've got a feeling it's going to be one of those films I'll probably enjoy more the second time I watch it.
I'll have to say this though, it makes me happy that it has a reputation amongst fans in general, even before the remaster came out. So hopefully there's an appreciation out there for the entire film and not just, you know, select fight scenes. So I mean, that will be for me an enduring example of what the players involved, both behind and in front of the camera, were capable of, including Fu Sheng. I think that's one of his best films.
Yeah, it's very good. I'd put New Sharon in boxes ahead of it personally, but both very good. That's another. If you like Disciples of Shaolin, I think you really like New Sharon in boxes.
Oh yeah, okay.
I've seen that one.
Yeah, I know, because I bought it off you.
I was just going to say that.
from Asian Bay.
No, directly off Stu. Well, what did you think of New Shining Boxes, Stu?
I thought it was quite good. There was sort of just the traditional, well, what you'd expect for a kung fu film. Like, gets beaten at the start, goes away, was it up a mountain to train?
Yes.
Yep, learns a new cell, comes back down and fucking raises hell.
Yeah. Simplifying the story, but... yeah, that's pretty much it. But there's some nice drama in there as well. It's not just flat-out fighting.
Who made it? Who directed it?
It's Chang Che and Wu Ma.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Directed it. So yeah, Chang Che and then Wu Ma. I think Chang Che and Ni Kuang wrote it, and it's got Fu Sheng and Jenny. And the baddie in this one replacing Fung Ha Khan and the guy I keep forgetting his name. I really shouldn't, because I've seen him about 50 films. He's always in the Shaolin, Chang Che Shaolin Cycle films, playing the bad guy. Damn it, I can't remember his name. But replacing him is Wang Lung Wei with his suit. That's one of my favourite bits about Wang Lung Wei in that. Wang Lung Wei walks around with his cigarette in his little cigarette holder. You know, those little pipe things that go in your mouth. Told you, cigarette. And then he's got this lackey that just follows him round carrying a suitcase, which has got a Wang Lung Wei surprise in it. You gotta watch the films, check that out. It's awesome.
The guy you were talking about that you did didn't remember, what was he in Shaolin Temple?
Or, the guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's in everything. Every time it's a Shaolin Cycle film for Chang Che, he's in there, and he's pretty much playing the same character.
So let's list a few ones here. Li Yimin,
no.
Bruce Tong, Shan Mao, Yu Hua, the guy from Conjuring with Me, Wong Chung. No.
I'm not sure.
Bowie.
I'm doing a quick search now.
See what you've done? You've got Quaken in his boots.
We need to find out.
I am searching now. I will... Well, Hong Kong is his name. I assume that's not Hong Kong. Stupid. Kong Do, that's it.
Yeah, I remember.
Or Chang Dao. It's probably more like it, Chang Dao. Yeah, he's a badass. He's in, what we got here? Blood Brothers, Iron Bodyguard, Shaolin Martial Arts, Men from the Monastery, Five Shaolin Masters, Disciple of Shaolin. He plays like a executioners from Shaolin. He's always a badass, you know, Shaolin burner in every film. I really like him as well, actually. I always think he looks a little bit like Carter Wong. A little bit.
Yeah, now that you say it, but it is a face you do remember, but I won't blame you for blanking on the name. Just a guy that turns up everywhere.
Yeah, it's always like with the reaction of, it's him. Every time he pops up on the screen, but I never actually bothered to remember his name. And just for the record, Hong Kong plays one of the bosses in Disciples of Shaolin. Fact fans. So then, Stuart, are we combining your last watched film with your band segment, seeing as they're kind of interrelated?
Well, no. For the last watched films, I'm just going to like choose one.
Okay.
Rather than explaining it twice.
Okay then. What did you watch last then, Stu?
Last night I watched. Well, rather than seeing the title, I'm going to do a little guessing game with Ken. Although I think you'll be able to get it right away. Sure. No Coke, No Hope.
Well, that is a key line in English from Juliet in Love.
There we go. Yep, so last night I watched Juliet in Love, which is Wilson Yip film for the year 2000. Stars Andrew and Francis. Storyline is basically Judy, who's Sandra, is a restaurant worker who is supporting her aging grandfather. And her, a few years before that, she was also suffering from like breast cancer, and basically her life went in the pan after her husband left her, and it's just been, well, as you can expect, a shitty time since then. So fucking things get worse when her grandfather's run down, but in that sort of way it kind of bumps her together with the other leading character, Jordan, played by Frances Ng, who's mainly just like a triad lackey who's got a habit for gambling. Now he's got this great debt to, like, Lamsuet, whose boss is Simon Yam, who's a fucking badass in this movie. He's just, I reckon, just even though he's a father figure, like, he's always got his kids, he's, well, you can see he's a good father, but sort of the Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde type transformation between them. And the shit hits the fan when Simon Yam leaves Judy and Jordan with his baby. Mainly, hey, look after this for a week. Ta.
I think he had that baby with a mistress, was it? Or something like that, yeah. So he needed to hide that fact.
And that was sort of the main reason how he ended up in hospital. But I'll not say why. Anyway, like, Wilson Yip, I've worked my way through, I think, I've worked myself through most of his movies now, sort of everything going from Flashpoint down to Bullets Over Summer, which also starred Francis Zoom, and which was also another really good film. But aye, this was definitely the key era for Wilson Yip. The movie was, like, tragic and enthralling at the same time. It is certainly one of those slow-burning dramas, do you think?
Yeah, it's spot on there, yeah. It's a challenging film. It's very...
Yeah. There's challenging subjects. And... I think... Obviously, Ken was right when it's like... Sort of... It's not a film you could sit and watch with your girlfriend if you're expecting it's sort of like a romantic comedy. Oh, no.
It's not going to get you some...
Nah.
I was going to say, did Wilson Yip direct a film called Days Raper?
First film. Or one of the first films. I think he directed a horror anthology first, and then the film after that was Days Raper, yeah. Early film, 95, I think.
Is that what it sounds like?
It sounds like some Category 3 trash. It is Category 3. I haven't seen it yet. I have it on Laserdisc. I expect it to be cheap and trashy and possibly great because of it. Maybe. Anthony Wong is in it, I think. So
that's always a plus.
Yes. But, you know, it's far off from Judith in Love, and it's far off from what he's doing now with the Donnie Yen action films.
Mm-hmm. And you're also fucking right on with Eric Kott. He was great in that film. Like, he wasn't himself, obviously. He was just such a lot more calmer, and it was right in saying his character was a bit slow.
Well, he's shy, I guess. I mean, there's a scene where he tries to hint that, not that he's in love with Sandra's character, but he's hinting at the current relationship that he thinks she has with Francis' character. And he plays a driving instructor, by the way. But it's, you know, you're very, very much right. He's calm, and it's not usual for you to see Eric Kott that way. But he's very effective.
Am I right in saying that kind of storyline kind of just burnt out in the later half?
Well, it's certainly what was more about Francis and Sandra's character rather than about the baby and the triad boss and the driving instructor. Yeah. It's more, you know, again, I'm not going to spoil it for you, but it gets you to, you realize that the final, like, 20 minutes are the most challenging in the film. Mm-hmm. And it may catch you off guard in the way that you want to rewatch the film, and I have done so a few times, but it's not a the narrative gets a bit thrown around and jumbled around, so but it does show the strength that Wilson Yip still has. He's not choosing to make these films now. Mm-hmm. but it was what got him on the scene, in my opinion. And now, and although that was sort of in the underground, now he's a big commercial director, and not a bad thing necessarily.
Yeah, I think he's still got it in him to pull, like, obviously do another film, which just reminds you so much of his past work. I'm just waiting for that one.
I've always liked, though, the experience you had with his initial films that most people saw in Bullets of Osama and this. He has a sort of quirky sense of humor at times. And the scene I'm thinking about is when Francis has the bottle smashed over his head and he's dripping blood all over the floor, and he spells out on the floor "hospital." Mm-hmm. Which I and Simon Yam's kid spells it out in English. H-O-S-P-I-T-A-L.
Or when the baby's crying and he's thrown up and down, trying to calm it, then smack.
But it's a heavy-duty film to watch, though. But not depressing in, like, look at me, I'm a filmmaker that makes depressing movies.
No.
You know, it earns being a regarded film. And indeed one of my favorite Will Smith films. Or the favorite, well.
I think it's time for us to go on over to the questions. This week, previous guest Mike Maley asks us, who is the best on-screen fighter/fighters in your opinion? What do you think, Mike?
Well, that's a tough one. I think there's a couple of ways of looking at it.
Well,
maybe three ways, I think. Go on, what are you going to say, Stu?
No, I was thinking, as you said, about ways. There's obviously, there's sort of like the Shaw Brothers lot. Then maybe more of the people that came through Golden Harvest. Okay. Then more of the more modern fighters.
Well, I was going to say, there's kind of three ways of looking at it. One, there's your kind of stylists, like people like Lau Gar Lung, who are, you know, not just actors doing martial arts, they're martial artists.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're about the art. So you'd have like Bruce Lee, Lau Gar Lung, Gordon Liu, you know, some deeply skillful people. But then I think you've got people like, then the second category is people who can sell a fight. You know, they might not have the technical ability, but they look like they can scrap, and it looks real. It looks, you know, it's got lots of energy in it. And I think Fu Sheng, Lo Li, Jason Statham. That would be the category of people who might be loose on skills, but they look like they can brawl. They you know, that they sell the fight on the screen. And that's just important to having really hot skills, I think, sometimes. And then three, I think there'd be kind of more your kind of stunty action fighter. You know, like a little bit like Jackie Chan. Although Jackie's done old school. I mean, he's mostly obviously going to be known and best when he's doing his kind of own brand of, it's kung fu, well, called kickboxing, usually, because it's not a particular form. But it's kind of more about, you know, dodging, using weapons, anything around you, horrible falls, that kind of stuff. It's not really about the art itself.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in those categories, I don't know, I suppose Yuen Biu, Jackie Chan, Sammo Hung would definitely be in the action kind of category. There's got to be plenty more, I don't know. Donnie Yen, he's obviously very skillful, but I'm not never been a big fan of his. A bit same with Jet Li. He's obviously very skillful, but I've never been that enamoured with his fights or his kind of on-screen skills. Tony Jaa. Now, he's a little bit of... in fact, I think he's a little bit of everything. That's why he's so good. He's kind of got the martial art. He obviously loves his Muay Thai and different forms of it. But also, he can sell a fight really well when he wants to, and he can do all the kind of, you know, taking horrible hits and stupid stunts, that kind of stuff. I don't know, what do you guys think?
Well, you obviously took a lot more depth to this question than me. I kind of just thought recently more, well, after one of the films I watched recently, Yuen Biu stones it to a T. Like, you're just watching, like, even the finale to Iceman Cometh, the guy's on fire. He's just, his fucking belt with Yinhua and Dick Wei are just, you kind of get tired of watching that stuff. Like, Eastern Condors, he was in top form on that. I think just the final fight in the base where it cuts in between, him, Yakuza Ikurata, Yinhua, Samo, Dick Wei, just, they're all the best fought you could have fighting at that time. That had to be easily probably one of the best action films that year.
Yeah, it's a cracking film.
And everyone in it.
Aye.
Yeah, I think you and Wah's definitely in the same kind of league. If you didn't get the, you know, the as much exposure or lead roles, you kind of had that look for a baddie. I think he's definitely in the league of Samo and Yuen Biu and Jackie. I mean, his tumbling skills are insane. There's a clip. We'll have to have a little shufty around deep YouTube and get it on the on the POF site, Stu. It's I might have mentioned it before, I can't remember now.
I think so. Is this the one where it's the award show?
Yeah, it's I think it's Miss World, or I mean Miss Hong Kong or something like that.
Yeah.
And because Eastern Condors was out that year, they did a little Eastern Condor flavoured demonstration.
It's an opera performance, basically.
Yeah. You have to see it to see Yuen Hua's flipping skills. The man is unbelievably good.
It's actually on the recent German DVD. That clip is included there. The German DVD has English subtitles, by the way, but that they sourced that clip from, which is also available on VCD in Hong Kong, as you know, Miss Hong Kong from that year. The whole pageant is included. But it's like a 5 to 10 minute performance with the lion dancing and stuff like that. But everyone in costume, which is insanely cool, from Eastern Condors. So Yuen Hua, probably with his fan and his the costume he has and stuff.
So I don't care if we've already linked it. Let's link it again. Because that bit with Yuen Hua is amazing. And I seem to remember, I think it might have been Samo, or maybe even Yuen Biu, said that out of the whole that whole school that they were in, it was always known that Yuen Hua was the best acrobat out of the lot.
Yeah.
In Dragons Forever, I love him in that film. He's just slimy, sneaky, greasy little baddie. and he's so physical with his acting as well. Everything he does is really, all his actions are kind of in character. Well, we're getting off the point here slightly, but yeah, link that clip.
I haven't seen Dragons Forever, but I have seen Eastern Condors, and obviously Eastern Condors is that very memorable baddie with his sort of tics. Which is compared to Dragons Forever, is it a completely different thing, or?
He's exactly the same, just swap the fan to a cigar.
Hang on. Hang on a fucking minute. You haven't seen Dragons Forever, Ken?
No.
I'm making a fucking list tonight. Right, we've got Crippled Avengers, New Shaolin Boxers, and Dragons Forever.
You know what? That list can be very long because I take my sweet fucking time to watch movies.
Man, I'm sending you those three films, my friend.
I would be happy to accept those films.
I've got the Swedish DVD of Dragons Forever as well, actually.
Yeah.
Which has got an alternate English dub on it.
It's just me. I take my sweet time, and considering some of these films are going to have multiple releases and stuff, and you know, they are not going to be rare anytime soon.
Yeah. So, I know there's tons of films that, you know, classics that I haven't seen, but damn it, Ken, you have to watch Dragons Forever.
I have absolute intent to. I'm protesting against it or anything. But if I would choose between that canon of films that Yuen Biu, Sammo Hung, and Jackie Chan did, I would probably choose Dragons Forever first, and I don't know why. I just have a gut feeling that I want to choose it first. Maybe like an ultimate Three Brothers movie or something, but, you know, it's just an instinct.
It is great for the three of them. They get lots of good screen time together. But see, I've managed to drag us completely off topic again, haven't I?
But it's still a good topic.
We're not talking about the Eurovision, so I mean, it's still fairly on topic.
There's still time.
Mm-hmm. So, Ken, what's your opinions on the best screen fighters?
Well, I think Mike hit the nail on the head there with his the way you divide it up, and I can't really bring anything new to the table because I thoroughly agree on each point there. If I had to choose one, spontaneous favorite that I can never get tired of watching fighting on screen, is probably Lau Garland. The times he has appeared in his own movies and the way he directs action overall, I think it's just mesmerizing to no end. And when you do have that ultimate fight between him and his brother Lau Gaoing in Legendary Weapons of China, I mean, it's enough to make your head explode. It's so good. And it's so, I don't have any knowledge of martial arts and stuff like that. I just enjoy what I'm seeing, and I know what I enjoy when I see it. And Lau Garland, I never get tired of watching. But as you said, Mike, he's in his own category, in his own style, and you know, it's really hard to say who's the best. So I look at the question as, you know, who do you like? Who do you get? You know, who do you get the biggest response, you know, from watching? And I think it's Lau Garland.
Okay. Second question tonight from Pants on Fire. He asks us, when people say they don't want to watch a foreign film because they have to read subtitles, is this ignorance or a valid point?
Well, coming from a country where I'm very much used to watching movies with subtitles, because Sweden is not a country where we dub live-action movies, and unless they're kiddies movies, you know, the Harry Potter films and stuff like that. From my perspective, I've gotten used to it, but I've had no problem appreciating a film on a the narrative and the visuals and stuff like that. I am used to it, and so I wouldn't say it's ignorance, because I think it's a matter of getting used to. And I don't really stand in the way of people, you know, saying that I absolutely can't stand subtitles because I won't be able to see the film. You know, I'm just coming from a different place, personally. So I'm staying neutral in the question, I guess. But you can train your ability. I guarantee you that.
What do you think, Mikey?
Well, I think there's definitely the view I think some people would take if you said, I don't want to watch a film, it's got subtitles. Which is kind of, you know, you look like he's trying to suggest, Pants on Fire, this email, that, you know, you're being a bit ignorant, or, you know, somehow you're a bit more intellectual if you're willing to watch the subtitles rather than listen to the a dub track or something. But subtitles is not a good way to watch a film. It's as simple as that. It's just not a good way. Looking down to read subtitles and they're back up to the screen and doing that repeatedly, you know, it really isn't the best way to watch a film. But I mean, you haven't got a lot of choice if you want to watch the audio, if you want the original audio when you're watching a film, which I do most of the time, especially if I'm watching a drama or something. Then it's just something you've got to put up with and get used to. It's not something. Subtitles aren't something to enjoy. It's just something you have to bear with to watch a flick, I think, most of the time.
If you do, I mean, get used to it. You do get used to it, then you.
Oh yeah, definitely.
It's not like you take the compromise of, oh well, I'm losing 50% of the experience, but oh well, you know, it's not that. I mean, so I will never buy that argument, now that I think of it, that, you know, you can dismiss the experience just because you have to read. But then again, it's a different perspective for me, I guess.
Yeah, but what I'm trying to say is, it's certainly not an ideal way to watch a film, is it? If you could watch the original audio, well, if you could understand the audio, say if you can speak Cantonese, then that would be such a much more enjoyable way to watch the film than having to read the way through it as well.
Sure.
But I mean, another thing that doesn't help is that dubbing is so awful on a lot of films. I mean, if you're watching a cheap stupid Taiwanese kung fu film. I think I've said this before. Sometimes you want a stupid dub because it, you know, where the dubbers are obviously taking the piss and messing around, because it kind of just adds to the camp charm and fun of it. But if you're trying to watch a drama, or a, you know, an action film with some drama elements in it, and trying to take it seriously, and you've got some ridiculous dubbing, then it I think it kind of devalues the film and makes it seem, I don't know. If there was good dubbing, then I think a lot more people would check out dubs rather than have subtitles. But like you said, you can train yourself. You get, you know, I'm totally used to watching subtitles now, but I could understand it if people don't want to watch a film because of subtitles.
I think even, well, more nowadays, it's actually becoming quite common for folk to watch subtitled movies. Like, examples like the French film Amelie. Like, that's like a sickly popular film. I think it's shown quite a lot. And it's, you know, just one of those highly ranked films ever. IMDb have their silly, 250 top films. And, like, number 4 is The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. And not seen that myself, but that was originally Italian.
Yeah, it's an Italian production. Or maybe Italian, German, Spanish, because some of these films were.
Oh, well, I'm just following up on the IMDb page where its language is Italian.
Well, it was dubbed in Italian and it was dubbed in English, and, you know, the people who could speak English probably did, and the people who could only speak German did, and so forth and so forth. So it's an all-round dubbed experience.
But that's good dubbing, though, isn't it?
It's pretty good.
That's what I'm trying to say, that the quality of dubbing there is good.
Yeah, so it's not nowhere near the old Taiwan, old Hong Kong stuff, where people with Australian accents and the UK accents, American accents, all blend together to make it a real.
What films I do know that have actually really good dubbing is the Japanese Studio Ghibli films. Not sure if many you've watched any.
I've not seen them in English anyway. I've seen Spirited Away. I saw that in Japanese.
Right, like Howl's Moving Castle last year, they had like Christian Bale dubbing that with Billy Crystal, and
Billy Crystal?
Yeah, he plays the Flame. He's sort of the more funny one.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, when they were shown in the UK more as like the Film 4 thing, like the free film channels, they were usually dubbed 1 week. They had sort of a season. 1 week they'd show the collection in English, the second week they'd show the collection in Japanese with the subtitles. And, like, these are films where I think they've put the money into the dubbing. They've got the right people, they're no here to make it soon silly, they've got people who are just favourable voice actors. People who have, like, the right voice. They even have, I think, it's usually people from, like, TV shows they had. That guy from The Simpsons who was killed.
Oh, Phil Hartman.
Yeah. That was
Lionel
one
Hutz.
Of his last. Yeah, that was one of his last films. But still, are films where they put, well, where the dubbing is good.
It's easier to dub an animated film, though, isn't it? Because the mouth movements of the characters will be fairly loose anyway, so you could get away with dubbing that a lot easier. I think if you see a live action film with dubbing where the voice doesn't match what's going on screen, it's a little bit harder to take it seriously.
Well, I still think it's better when the person dubbing it doesn't actually sound like an idiot.
Oh yeah. It seems to be like in the 80s films, especially the Jackie ones that are dubbed, there's always one dubber that can't wait to use his super camp high-pitched accent voice. He's saying, "Oh, I'll get your suit for you," or something like that, and he just can't wait to get that voice out. He's watching the film. Oh, brilliant, there's a waiter, I'll get my old camp voice out. It's always utterly ridiculous. I seem to remember
probably an American guy too or something like that.
Yeah,
tried to use his stereotypical Brit accent.
Leave its Armor of God. The dub of that has got... I watched on VHS, so it's probably the... I think it was English voices or British voice dubbers in that one. It's got, like, just the most ridiculous, high-pitched camp dub job for one of the characters in it.
But what about Lan Ching Ying in Prodigal Son? Remember his voice? It almost sounded like he was done by Fred West.
And therefore the impact of that performance got totally lost.
I remember people referring to that as the funny dub.
Ah.
So.
Shit. Do not root. I'll keep away from the dub of that movie then.
Yeah.
Well, I quite like the dub for that, actually. It's not that bad. Mm-hmm. I think they've made the... I don't know if it's in... I can't remember if it's actually in the original Cantonese, but I think they've made the assumption, if it isn't, that Lam Ching Ying's gay. And so they give him a slightly camp, feminine voice in that one, in the English dub. And I believe Samo's character keeps referring to him as being gay.
I don't remember that angle, except obviously he was hyped. His voice was high pitched when he was in his opera performance, costume and stuff. But well, you can argue about that aspect, I guess. But speaking of the subtitles again, I've seen this trend on a few TV shows and a few DVDs that they move around the subtitles to match the position where the person is who's talking, like on Heroes. Apparently they do that with Japanese dialogue.
Interesting.
Where the subtitles appear, you know, everywhere on screen, basically. Have you seen that? Do you think that is a preferable solution?
It's a different way about it. It just depends how much dialogue they say, because, you know, in some films where it practically goes from one side of the screen to the other, and if they had it by the mouth, it'd be like a small paragraph. And
right.
I don't think that's very convenient.
But have either you seen the Russian film, Night Watch?
No, I was about to mention that. I remember I read that they structured it like that.
The subs are fantastic in that film. That's exactly the way to do subtitles, if you can be bothered. Because they change colour, they change size, they change typeface, sometimes they like disappear in they kind of merge with the pictures on screen and stuff. They put loads of work into them to make them really expressive and kind of fit the mood and the tone of a scene and what characters are saying. They're excellent subtitles.
This have to have been from the DVD then.
What, the subtitles?
Yeah, well, from what you watched, was it the DVD?
No, it was on Film 4.
So they never actually changed them on Film 4? Because you know how Channel 4 have the habit of, just making it plain white subs?
No, they used the theatrical subs. Because I believe Timur, I can't remember his name, the director, did the went back and did the subtitles, because I believe he speaks English. And so he and, I don't know, I assume some of the subtitlers and people like that, they went back to it, and then they're the one who added all the flourishes to kind of make it work with the film, rather than just being a block of white text that appears underneath, you know, on the bottom of the picture all the time. It makes it part of the film, part of the experience. I mean, obviously, that's only going to work on a film that's released theatrically and has some budget behind it in the first place.
Mm-hmm. I'll have to check it out after my ban.
Also, that film kicks ass, so I'd recommend watching it anyway.
Yeah.
It's crazily creative and full of, it's just great. Watch it. It's unlike anything I've ever seen before.
And it's a sequel now out also. It's a Day Watch.
Yeah, I think there's three. It's a trilogy.
Okay.
If I'm right, there's a trilogy of books, and what they've done is they've put the trilogy of books into two films. And then they're supposed to be making another film in English. The same director's making it in English. But it's not actually from the three books. I think that's what I read anyway. Because they kind of crammed the last two books or so, or a book and a half, into this last, into Day Watch. But I haven't seen it yet, unfortunately. I'm going to have to get around to watching that.
So I think we've kind of answered Pant's question.
I think we're on it tonight. I think, you know, yeah, we owe each other some virtual high fives.
We've answered the Pant's question, was that it?
Yeah. Anyway, Ken, do you have any underrated films for us?
The movie I chose this week, by instinct, this movie, again, the choices I make doesn't sound really special at all, but in my opinion they are, and it's a movie called Call Girl 92, which by the sound of it, yes, it was made in 1992. You know, between a few, let's say between the late 80s and the beginning of the 90s, there was this trend of hostess films in Hong Kong, usually very downbeat, you know, showing the downward spiral of good characters, obviously girls, that sink into the world of club hostesses and obviously prostitution and stuff like that. The Call Girl 92 movie, directed by a girl called Andy Chin, who I found made a few quite fun movies there. He was, first of all, one to really apparently push for sync sound as much as possible. Even in his first movies, like in the late 80s. So, and this movie indeed, about a group of call girls and the men in their lives. The call girls does include Veronica Yip, Chung Man, or Chala Chung, Cecilia Yip, and Carrie Ng. So, you know, it's a attractive cast altogether. And I think kind of halfway in you realize that there is something different going on with this film. The central story about basically Veronica Yip's character and Vincent Wan's character, and I believe Vincent Wan is either in one or a few of the Young and Dangerous films, or he was just a guy that appeared in a lot of Triad movies in the late 90s, but... So there's something that happens with this movie when it focuses more on the characters played by Veronica Yip and Vincent Wan. They have a fear of being separated and realize that they have a connection that no one really wants to abandon anymore. And you sort of realize that this is not your normal hostess film. It's actually a very good and well-performed drama. And when you have the sync sound bit, which obviously it doesn't add anything in terms of me understanding the dialogue, but it adds the reality of the situation, of hearing the actual voice of people that you not, you know, it's not common that you got to hear the likes of Carrie Ng and Joy Wong and Cecilia Yip and their real voices and stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's very much one of the best hostess films out there, and one of Andy Chin's best films. And outside of Call Girl 92, he made a fun movie called Changing Partner with Sandra Ng and Anthony Chan. Again, a sync sound movie, a sort of buddy cop movie. Mm-hmm. Love Among the Triad. And recently he was rumored to direct the Painted Faces remake, but I don't think I've read his name again. The closer this got to production, I think Gordon Chan is directing now. Because I read in the Bay Logan blog that he visited set with Donnie Yen and Gordon Chan, so it's possibly that. But Call Girl 92, it's easily mixed up with a whole host of other films, because another hostess film called Girls Without Tomorrow, Girl Without Tomorrow, was called also known as Call Girl 88. Mm-hmm. And to make it even more confusing, that Call Girl 88 movie got not a sequel, but by the same director in 1992, they made a movie called Girls Without Tomorrow. It was basically the same title, but Girls Without Tomorrow in 1992. So yeah, all of a sudden you got the Call Girls and your Girls Without Tomorrow, and Hong Kong cinema tying a knot on itself. Mm-hmm. Basically, so those movies, though, are not bad in themselves, but they are more like automatic hostess films that feels like we have to punish them in some ways. How do we do that? So, It's not really a genre with great artistry. The most memorable moment out of any Hostess movie is out of a movie called Moonstar and Son, which stars Maggie Cheung, and she's forced to have sex with a rather fat man in one scene. And you know that I don't think she wants to remember that film, but she was in it, and it can't be forgotten. So that's it. Call Girl 92 still available some places at the on an Ocean Shores DVD, which is not, you know, pristine in any way, but it's the only way to watch the film now, and it's very much watchable. No audio commentary or no DTS sound or anamorphic transfer. It's a full screen presentation with burned in English subs. But you know what? You'll enjoy the film despite. I guarantee you that.
Very cool.
And now the band segment.
Indeed. I like how you already judged that it's going to be my funeral. Well, let's see, I think we'll start with the numbers right away. So, last week was it 42? 43?
43, yeah.
43. Well, this week it's now 38.
Ah, you did some extra, you put in some extra time then.
Yep.
Congratulations, sir.
Mm-hmm. The night after the recording podcast 14, I went on to watching Chinese Odyssey Pandora's Box.
Oh yeah, that's the first one, isn't it?
Yep. And I actually really, really enjoyed that film.
One of the funniest Stephen Chow films.
Yeah, and actually really silly to have not watched the second part now, but I'm actually really wanting to show this to my girlfriend, and I thought it would be appropriate to watch both in the same night.
Yeah. It was one epic film, I think, but they for distribution they cut it up.
Yeah.
But they ended on a very appropriate note.
Oh, fucking brilliant.
It's a cliffhanger, and the second film is quite different, I think. It's not, you know, they do take it in some other directions. I think it's quite logical in a way.
Like, they tend to end the first movie with a trailer for the second movie.
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
So, yeah, there was that. Then on the weekend, I sat down and watched Above the Law, well, Right and Wrongs, which, that sparked my flame for Yuen Biu again. The guy was just top-notch in that film, and Melvin Wong, oh, what a bastard.
Indeed. And not the cheery movie, though.
No, I forgot, kind of forgot how it ended, and yeah.
But you did you say that you had only seen the movie under the title Above the Law?
Yeah, the original VHS.
Because this is the movie you now watched was had a completely different ending to Above the Law, completely different.
Mm-hmm.
And not on a cheery note, as I said.
And strange enough, the Dragon Dynasty DVD includes the alternative ending, but I find it strange that when you go to watch a clip, it is basically the last half hour of the movie.
Yeah, I think they are, for some reason, really showed up. They could have showed what would sort of be 5 minutes from the end of the Hong Kong version, but the alternate ending is quite longer and adheres a little bit to said rules within cinema. Morality within cinema, so I'll say nothing else. It's quite a lame ending. I like the Hong Kong one better because I'm a sucker for, you know, surprising you with that kind of darkness.
Mm-hmm.
It really takes some unexpected turns.
And as I mentioned already, tonight watched Juliet in Love, and amongst all that I was kind of watching Rush Hour 3 in pieces. It was sort of the movie between takes I would watch.
Sounds symbolic in a way.
But I was listening to it on and off with the audio commentary with like director Brett Ratner and the writer. And yeah, they're no Stephen Hammond.
No, well, no one can be as bad as Stephen Hammond, but I bet they're very self-congratulatory. They self-congratulate themselves a lot.
But they actually, they tried to talk to the audience, telling them, don't worry, there won't be a Rush Hour 4.
Oh, honesty.
They kind of explained it in the way of Rush Hour 1. It was Jackie Chan and Chris Tucker were basically strangers that just met. Rush Hour 2, they were friends. Rush Hour 3, they become brothers. And if they had to do Rush Hour 4, they would have to become lovers.
I would pay to see that film. I would fucking pay to see that film. Gay Rush Hour.
So, after that, there was a couple... Well, if you actually look at my list on the website, it does include some American movies as well. I'm not just judging it on all the Asian cinema I haven't watched, so there was one or two American films flung in there, but we're keeping it to the Asian cinema side.
I'm going to pull up the list here and see if I can make a general recommendation or two. Let's see here. Funeral March. I would absolutely recommend that you watch Funeral March. It's a sad movie, but still very good. Eason Chan, Charlie Choi movie. And to balance that out, if I had to make another recommendation, Her Fatal Ways 2.
Right.
That would be two, you know, if you're sad and lonely after Funeral March, then watch Her Fatal Ways 2 for some Carol Dodo Cheng, Alka Jung, and Michael Chow silliness.
Okay. I think I'll do the same as I did last week. I'm going to at least watch three films before the next pod. Well, actually, I better hold that.
Well, before Sunday, you only have a few days.
Yeah, I was like, shot myself in the foot there, because I think the ban list might have to be put on hold, especially for our Shaw Brothers show, because I do want to catch up on a couple of Shaw Brothers films, rewatch some of the classics, just get me in the mood for Sunday. So,
well, the board approves.
Yes.
And I'm the only one on the board currently, so. Unanimous decision.
There we go. Right, so moving on over to our plug-in section.
Okay, well, I'm going to obviously plug www.greenfandvd.com. As always, the trailer for Return of the Deadly Blade will be appearing on the site very soon, along with the release date and some details of what's going to be on the disc, which will come out in April. Also, www.senaishow.com, because Return of the Deadly Blade and Injured Ancient China is showing there, and that festival starts on the 26th and continues on the 27th of April, and that should be a cracking event. There's some good stuff on there from what I've seen so far. I believe Linda Lee, Bruce Lee's wife,
right,
is going to be appearing there, because they're opening the Bruce Lee Museum. Also, I mean, it's off topic, but screw it, I don't care. Since when does that stop me?
Yeah.
Due to the move of Green Fan headquarters, I found a box of comic books from when I used to collect comic books when I was a kid. It's got to be about 14, 15 years ago now, I was collecting. And yeah, I found them in the loft and broke them out and started reading them. Mm-hmm. And rediscovered my love for comic books. Mm. Yeah, I'm a kind of genre film fan at heart, which is why I love kung fu films and, you know, gangster action films and things like that. I mean, I'm not opposed to, like, serious drama and things like that, but it, you know, it's... If somebody gives me a plot synopsis about, like, some kind of ninja taking on vampires and witches in modern-day New York while a giant Godzilla-like monster attacks, then, you know, you've got my interest straight away. And so, you know, comic books, Spider-Man, X-Men, etc., doing it for me. And so I've really got back into it, and so I thought I'd link to www.paninicomics.co.uk. Panini.
Panini?
Yep, as in the people who used to make all the stickers that I used to collect when I was a kid.
I thought you meant, like, the toasted baguettes.
No, Stu, it's not a comic about toasted baguettes.
Aww.
Yeah. It's...
the Cajun chicken fighting.
It's an idea right there.
Right, you were saying?
Yeah, well, basically, Panini Comics, P-A-N-I-N-I, and I think it's a French company. But they have the rights to Marvel Comics in the UK, and they produce about 7 or 8 comic books, and a few of them have kind of got more than one character kind of mixed into one comic book. Mm-hmm. But I mean, if you like action, and you know, there's plenty of fighting and action explosions and, you know, genre like chicanery and adventure, then there's plenty going on in the comic books, and I'm really loving it.
Because
it's what I've been thinking about this week.
Mm-hmm.
So that's me all plugged out there, Stu.
Tonight, I'd like to remind everyone of the sort of the Lycee envelope competition thing we're doing here. We've got the main details on the website and on our forum, and it's basically like, if you remember some Hong Kong movies where it goes into the Chinese New Year and members get sort of like a little red envelope with lucky money. It's just, well, you see it in most films which will go into the new year. And we're kind of doing the same thing. We're giving out little golden envelopes. And rather than lucky money, we've got little lucky discount vouchers for Asian Bay. So, yeah, we're ranking anything from 50 pence discount up to like a free purchase. Now, the main thing is you have to read the terms and conditions before jumping the gun and trying to do this and do that and realise you may look like a bit of a fanny. So, if you do receive one of the envelopes, read the terms and conditions first. There's always one included there along with the vouchers. And tonight, since we had questions from both we've got Mike Maley and Pants on Fire, I'm going to send both of you an envelope just as a launch, so you two will get them in the post fairly soon.
Congratulations, guys.
Yep, and go to the usual plugs, podcastandfire.com. Got our members only package, sign up to our new forum, which many congrats to Matt for upgrading for us, because yeah, I'm shit at it, so other plugs, hkcuk.co.uk, dragonsdenuk.com, sogoodreviews.com, greenfandvd.com, and see, I'll give another wee shout out to my Flashpoint article, and it's Jade Screen magazine, not Screen Power. Thing is, it's sort of two magazines. Screen Power magazine is a Jackie Chan magazine. The Jade Screen magazine is a Hong Kong cinema magazine. But it's not really that confusing, the fact that both magazines are one. It's sort of like a flip-over thing. So, either way, my article is in that magazine, depending on which side. So,
it sounds economic.
Mm-hmm. And sponsoring us for this is... Screen Power is giving us 3 issues of this month's magazine to give away on site. So yeah, and we're going to have a little competition coming up in a couple of weeks where you'll get to win a copy of the issue. So
signed by Stu himself?
Maybe. We'll just see how much of it goes to my head. So.
And how much the value decreases now.
Okay, Kenny, what's your plugs this week?
Excuse me. Keeping fairly short and simple, stogoodreviews.com, and if you visit it at least 5 times, you'll know what lunacy to expect there. Point you also towards, although it's a dead site currently, that this is there's going to be a link in the either on the podcast link when it goes up or in the members section of the board, but there's a site called A Free Man in Hong Kong, which was dedicated to the work of Chow Yun-Fat. and especially the early work, even including his very, very first low-budget B-movies that he made at late 70s. So it's just fun to click through. I mean, and the reviews are quite solid, and the site never really completed its Chinfeld filmography, but you won't find reviews online for most of the early stuff, which I enjoy watching, especially to see Chiang Fat's hair. The early side of Chiang Fat. There's a few standouts in that regard. The Headhunter, which is a movie that is available in some shape or form, and a really old movie called Pursuit, which I have seen, which is totally shit. But the reviews are on there for the very old one, and even some writings on the Bund, the TV series he got famous for. So that link will be available, and the site is still online, even though it's not updated anymore. So I guess to steal the phrase from Mike Banner, now I'm all plugged out.
Oh, class act, sir. Okay.
I can emphasize it, like, now I am. And then you can have an alternate teacup there to buy from the Podcast on Fire merchandise store. Sometime in the future.
Right, so that's another day and another show done. So I'm the host, Stuart Sutherland.
Yep.
And we'll catch you guys next time. Say anything else, Mike?
Nah. You got any get it in their brains? Or are you just gonna push some buttons?
I'm gonna fucking press the mute button then.